Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2, the safe space created for Black women, by Black women, to strip away the taboo of talking about mental health. You'll hear from mental health professionals and advocates, as well as Black women sharing their experiences as we break down the complexities, explore ways to heal, and support each other. My name is Ashley, I'm your host. Whether you're a seasoned regular or this is your first time tuning in, thank you so much for your support. Now let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2. I am your host, Ashley, and I have a very special guest. Been super excited to bring her onto the pod. Thank you. And she just moved to Austin, and so I'm really hyped for her. I've been giving her like a bunch of places that she's got to eat in Austin and explore.
Yes.
So she is... Officially, I'm welcoming you to Austin, even though I'm not in Austin. I went to school in Austin. For anybody that's listening, it's like, why is she tripping over Austin? That's why. But today we have Alicia Chelsea Jones, a.k.a. Tricky Vibes. So welcome to
the show. Hello, hello, fellow Austinite.
Yes. How are you doing today? How are you feeling?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Can't complain.
Yes. Yes, congrats to the move. Congrats on the move to Austin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, that's super exciting. You're going to love it there. I loved it. I loved all my time there. I love going back there. So I'll be sending you more fun places to go.
Oh, please do. Because top of my list is eating and then everything else. So if you just want to run down that list of restaurants.
Yes. We'll hit the restaurants, we'll hit like the food trucks. You got to go to Gordo's Donuts. Shout out to Gordo's Donuts. The donuts are insane.
Can you tell me about that one?
Oh, yeah. That literally, the donuts are insane. It's like s'mores donuts, and it's just, it's huge. I think there might be, see, I'm getting off track. Let me bring it back. I'll tell you.
I got you.
But there's tons of fun stuff to do out there. But, I'm really excited to bring you on the pod. You have such a unique, very artsy background, so I'm excited to get into that today and talk about how you have spent time in the mental health profession, talk about, you know, like, what mental health looked like to you growing up, and then how, like, what has been your journey up until this point. So before we jump into that, though, I want to get to know you a little better. So we're going to play Fast and Curious.
Yes, and Curious. Let's go. Let's go.
For anybody that's new to the podcast, for anybody that's been listening, y'all already know what it is. But for anybody that's new, we are going to ask Alicia a bunch of random questions and just see what comes out. We're going to do it for about 3 minutes. I always say 3 minutes. It usually turns into six, but we're just going to roll with it.
This is dangerous for everybody. I'm going to tell you all the time. I know.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
If you could have any superpower, what would you have?
I would have the ability to ensure that people were not punished for crimes that were not committed.
Ooh.
I wasn't ready for my own response.
That was good. People were not punished for crimes that they did not commit.
Yes. And so, I guess in my mind, that would be all versions of crime. Like, from the smallest to the largest. Like, from manipulation all the way down to, like, I say little down, to, like, murder. Like, if you really didn't do it, can't get punished for it. And I mean that also in the non, like, prison system realm as well. Like, if your boss is a not-so-nice person and they are, like, vindictive, like, their form of punishment, I'm telling you.
So then you call Tricky Vibes and you're like, hey, girl, I need you to come rescue me.
Yeah.
And then...
And bippity-boppity-boo. What happened?
So you're also planning on, like, completely dismantling the privatized prison system as well, if you're doing that.
I mean,
what else? Get it all done.
What else is there to do? I'm just
kidding. I love it. I love it. Okay, did you play any instruments growing up?
My voice. So I was a... It counts as an instrument.
I like it. It definitely does.
So I was a heavy churchgoer, and so I sang in... the children's choir, the women's choir, the every other Thursday choir. I also was on all of the choral performances at school. Anywhere I could go and nice. Bust my chops, I was there. So it's an instrument.
So are you like, what do they call, what's the name of the different levels of voices? Tenor?
Oh, yes. Soprano? So, yes. Soprano, alto, tenor, baritone. If you want to go that deep, okay.
She's going all the way up, all the way back down.
Most people, or I guess most like churches or general choral things do about three. So, by trade, I'm a soprano. But in real life, I'm actually like a baritone. Okay. So it's like trained at the highest, but I'm actually deep.
Oh, okay. So we're going like Sade up to like Mariah tones. We can just span the. I like it. Okay. If you could have your own TV show, you got a 30-minute show. You know, we're gonna throw it on. Let's just throw it on Hulu. You got 10 episodes. What is it gonna be about?
Oh, 10 episodes. Oh God, I can fill 10 episodes in like 5 minutes. I think that my show would be about like the after response of people I've done readings for. I'm a psychic and I'm a tarot reader. I guess we're going to get into that. But a lot of times when I'll do readings for people, they'll call me back a month later, weeks later, year later, and they'll be like, oh my God, you said this and then this happened. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
So it would be like, okay, so we talked about this in February of 2021. It's January 2022. What happened? And like, get the lowdown. But it would also probably be like the animated version of their life, so they could like frame it how they wanted to. So it would be like a graphic novel slash like real time. I don't know.
I like that. Hulu, call her.
Call her. Let her know.
Okay, what is your favorite dish that you cook or that you like to go eat?
I love tacos, so that's my go eat. But like I feel like my love language is like acts of service, and by acts of service I just mean cooking for you. So I love to make pot roast. I am like a slow cook, slow watch. I am a crock pot queen. Okay, so
I love it.
Throw it in there. I like to wait overnight and wake up in the morning, and then like the whole house smells like whatever I'm cooking.
Yeah,
that's my jam. I love that.
If you could have any animal for a pet, what would you have? Any animal. You can be any like animal. Somewhere on the like safari. It could be somewhere from like the Amazonian rainforest. It could be a bird.
This is gonna be such a weird answer, but like I know people have like snakes. Like I'm terrified of snakes, but like if I could tolerate having a snake, then I would, because I think it'd be cool to like touch. But otherwise, I want to be boring. But I say like I really want a dog now.
Not a dog.
I know. But you have you ever looked at those like little? Okay, the internet has me in grips right now because it just found out that I am like with child. So as soon as I open my phone now, it's all like the YouTube, like the rescue dog missions, where like I found this dog on the street. Turns out it's a mom and she's having puppies, and
Oh my gosh.
That or like a little kangaroo. What is that? A Joey?
Why did I think you were gonna say kangaroo at the beginning when I asked you that question? That's so weird. Okay.
I mean, you're pretty intuitive yourself.
But also congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. We're rolling into the second trimester.
Okay. I'm going to switch up the questions then.
Sorry.
What are you most excited about becoming a mom? And what are you most nervous about? Let's hit both sides of the spectrum.
Okay. All right. We're going to get deep in the anxiety part.
Let's get into it. This is a place for it.
You're making me feel like this is a safe space. I am actually most excited about like sharing an unconditional love with someone that I made. I feel like, yes, that's motherhood, but I also feel like there's a different type of depth with that. It'll pretty much the entire experience will be what I make of it. And so I'm excited to be able to craft that at the base level with someone who is a someone in like such a tiny form. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that sounds weird.
No, I get it.
My anxiety is, oh my gosh, like there's like this paradox between the mom blogs that exist that's like, oh my God, motherhood is so beautiful and this and that. And I'm just sitting here like, man, this has been like the toughest thing I've ever done. Pregnancy is a challenge. But I also have felt like as like an entrepreneurial spirit, I've kind of been like, oh my gosh, like I'm losing a part of my identity because I'm not going to be able to identify with my business mind as much, or I'm going to have to like, basically I'm losing the identity of not being a mom, and I'll never not be, not be a mom again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're moving into like being permanently attached to somebody. And so there's that unconditional love there, but there's also like, it will never just be me again.
Yeah, because sis, I feel like I just got me together. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now I'm like, man. Now I got another one. What?
Oh my goodness. There's so many emotions, I'm sure, just that come every day. It's got to be, right? Because it's a whole shift in. It's a life shift. And you moved, so like you're in a new place. Like you're in a new home.
I moved for this child. Like even if I wanted to move before said child, like I feel like my body and my spirit were preparing me to have a child by being in a different place. Because I guess where I was growing up, I had moved back there temporarily. I knew I didn't want to be there forever. I was like, we just rolling through. And I had always felt like somewhat stifled in a way, like everyone thinks like this, and we're all doing this, we're all doing the same things. And I just felt like, I don't want to say trapped, but I felt confined in a way. And I talk about that a lot, like in people's readings about like being confined to a city or to a town or to a culture physically and how that affects your growth. And so my thought was, yeah, girl, I got to get up out of here because like I want to have the best opportunities moving forward, but I also want my child to have that too. So mentally preparing to make that transition, I feel like was the ultimate preparation, like physically moving. It's, I don't know. It's kind of like how like Native Americans will move based on their season. Like, I feel like I'm in a new season. Right. So I have to go to a place that best supports the community, or well, myself, myself and my community. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That resonates with me. Cause I move a lot. Like I've been in Tampa almost like 2.5 years. We were in Miami for like 3 years before that. And then we were in New Zealand for like 2 years before
that.
And then we were in Vegas like 2 years before that. So I'm like, I get that. Sometimes you'd like, okay, I need to just get up and be somewhere new, like be inspired. And yeah, I just realized, so thank you for playing Fast and Curious with me.
Oh, game's done. Okay.
That was done. 3 minutes turned into 10, but that was great.
Perfect. Thank you.
That was like, yes. That was awesome. I realized I never actually said your bio, so come back and just.
You already know. No, okay.
I mean, yeah, we're already there, but I'm going to roll back a little bit and talk a little bit about Alicia. And so she was born and raised in Greenville, South Carolina. Shout out to all the people from South Carolina that have been on the podcast. There's been like quite a few of y'all in June. June and then right rolling into July. I like it. So she holds a bachelor's degree in social work from University of South Carolina.
Okay,
and a master's degree in social work from LSU. Alicia is a 200-hour registered yoga teacher. Shout out to all the black yogis.
Namaste.
Yes. Namaste. Love it. She's a former social worker who chose to change her career path a couple years ago and is currently an aspiring creative director. We're just going to say creative director because we're going to own it.
Okay.
You're a creative director.
And that's that on that.
Yes. She's also a published author, a musician, and a spiritual advisor. She published her first memoir-style poetry collection, Acquainted, followed by You Wrote This Into Me, and also published Mindfuck. Yes, there might be some cussing in this episode, so if y'all are offended.
I've gotten, so far, so good, though.
You'll be all right. So Alicia is, I mean, she's doing a lot of amazing things. She's also a psychic and tarot reader. So we are going to get into this very diverse and colorful background. But before we do that, we got one more stop to make before we get over there. We are going to do our mind games segment. Okay. So for those of you that don't know, mind games is basically where we do some trivia. And I give you guys a little test on, you know, a different mental health disorder. Sometimes it's a person that's had an impact on mental health as a whole. And today we are going to talk about psychedelic treatments for mental health disorders.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
So I'm going to give you guys a description of this particular psychedelic treatment and give you a little bit of background on it, and you guys get to guess what it is. So you have to hold on to your guess to the very end of the episode, and then we'll circle back to it.
Okay.
All right, here we go. My phone is going a little crazy over here. All right. What is happening? There we go. Okay. Most popular in the 1960s, mostly with hippies, this particular psychedelic treatment or drug was also known as acid. It was later seen as a threat to society and declared a Schedule I substance in 1970. But prior to that, there were several studies going on across the country to figure out how it could be used for treatment of mental health issues and how it could potentially be mind-opening and mind-altering. At the present, there is interest in finding out if psychedelics like this one can treat mental health issues like anxiety and depression, and particularly substance abuse or substance use disorders. The interest has grown after psilocybin. So I guess you guys know it's not psilocybin. The interest has grown particularly after psilocybin, which is the active compound found in magic mushrooms, has shown promising treatments in similar mental health disorders like depression, anxiety, and PTSD. Side note, and I have to find out where this is, but I read something the other day that there is a study going on with veterans and using psilocybin to help treat PTSD. I need to find that. If I find it, I'll put that in the description. So what is this powerful psychedelic? So it is considered a classic hallucinogen. It has mind-altering substances, or it is a psychoactive or mind-altering substance believed to work mostly by affecting the way serotonin in the brain functions. So as we know, serotonin is a chemical in the brain that is directly linked to our feelings of satisfaction, happiness, and optimism. It's one of our happy hormones. How does this particular psychedelic affect people? It can slow down or speed up one's sense of time, change the way people think about their identity. It can cause you to see colors and objects that aren't real, or changes in the sizes and shapes of objects that are real. You can have experience changes in sound or movement. It can cause happiness, hence the serotonin jump. And it can also cause you to have delusions. So what does it look like in its pure state? It's white, odorless. It's a white, odorless liquid that's kind of has a bitter taste. And it's common that it is dropped onto pieces of paper. Yes. So do you have an idea of what it is?
Yeah, it's LSD.
Alicia? Hey, okay. We're not going to circle back at the end because we got the answer. So the answer, you're absolutely right. The answer is LSD. So for, my phone is just spazzing.
Your phone's on LSD.
It looks like it. So LSD, and I'm going to do my best to pronounce this, but the official term is D hyphen lysergic acid dithylamide. And I know all the nurses and nurse practitioners and psychiatrists are like laughing at me, but no, that's what it says. I'm trying. It's the most common hallucinogen. Let me go back down to what it looks like. So different ways that it can be ingested. Like I mentioned, it can be on blotting paper, and typically that is like put on your tongue. It may also be dissolved into liquid, such as like breath fresheners, or on gum, candy, cookies, or sugar cubes. They can also be given in tab form, where they're like little tiny tabs or micro dots, similar in like rave culture, club culture, where you might have seen, maybe you haven't seen it in real life, but maybe like Euphoria, you might have seen it on that TV show, or just like old shows. You might see like the big sheet of paper and there's like lots of little dots on there. So you might be wondering, Ashley, why are you talking about LSD? There's been, like I mentioned earlier, a lot more interest into alternative forms of treatment for mental health. Like, as everybody knows, like mental health is something that people are slowly starting to talk about more. But that also means conversations about outside of the normal SSRIs or mental health medications that people are typically prescribed. There are other options out there that have not been explored to the extent that some of these SSRIs have been explored. And the kind of cool part that I like about it is they're not really connected to the pharmaceutical companies yet. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But they're not. There's not that connection to the pharmaceutical companies. This is really just like not always a connection. But this is something that, for me, seems like it's coming from a bit of a pure place. So clinical trials have reported that patients have experienced easier access to emotion, better ability to confront previously unknown anxieties and concerns. Sounds like an ayahuasca trip as well. Blissful states and happiness. Sounds and music that create visual sensations. Changes in observations. Feeling detached from your environment and surroundings. Depersonalization, where you feel like you are observing yourself from outside of your body. Increased feeling of well-being, closeness to others, openness to new emotions and ideas, and sensing that you're connected with something larger than yourself. So, I think it's super cool. What do you think, Alicia?
I was like, can I just speak on this for like a multiple perspectives? Yes, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
On the one hand, which I don't want to put like all my business out there, but I'm saying I feel like psychedelic research is going to absolutely change the world. Not just with LSD, but also up-and-coming things like ketamine, psilocybin research. But also, we can look at things that have already started to become integrated with, like, PTSD treatment, such as THC, marijuana, at low doses. The same types of treatments that have been, will start to be prescribed to even children, which is a little controversial, but in the social work world, it is been a long term conversation.
Really?
Yes. Especially for children with ADHD, autism, in social work world, we have found that it. Okay, let me science it back up.
Yeah, you got to put it in layman's terms for us.
All right, so
I can see your brain turning. I'm like, okay, make sure I can understand it.
So, in some social disorders, children often present with traumatic responses that are pretty much hypervigilant, where they are hyperreactive to their environment, even if it's a small stimuli, and that progresses over time, and they may either mismanage it or not know how to manage it, or are not in a space where they're old enough to understand how to manage it. And so people have been, instead of saying, let's take ADHD medications like Adderall, They're using like mood altering natural alternatives to help to aid with everyday functionality without, you know, the highs and things. So yes, psychedelic research has its wave, but I also feel like CBD and THC research has already kind of made its way in.
Yeah, it's kind of opened the door, I think, to like the larger conversation of alternative types of treatment.
And it very much exists, and there's lots of states that have already kind of approved that.
Yeah.
They're a little bit more on the progressive end. But
yeah, shout out to Vegas, my hometown, because I was home a few months ago and they announced that likely next year they're going to be approving psilocybin to be recreationally used and sold in dispensaries. So I feel like that's a game changer.
DC as well.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Ah, wow. I will say when I was home, I mean, Vegas is already a great place, but it's definitely a chill vibe now. Like, it's definitely
chilled out.
Because cannabis has been legal, and I know for some people, this may be like a bit of an awkward conversation, or just a very new thing. Like, wow, why would I go outside of what the pharmacist or the pharmaceutical companies have deemed safe? But I think it's really important for everybody to know that. I think it's important for everybody to know that there are other alternatives out there that deserve to be studied. And I think for everybody, you should have an idea of, as these alternatives become more and more readily available, as there's like more studies that you can sign up to be a part of. I think there's a huge stigma, as we all know, from like the hippie craze. I also think like the hippie like craze of like the 60s, 70s, sometimes I feel like people just, they give it such a bad rap, but if you really look at it, like people were just exploring their minds and being open and like having conversations. And I think that scared the shit out of the government. And I think that's why half of it is on like the Schedule 1 drug list.
I mean, we could go down the conspiracy theory, you know, rabbit hole of the government is trying to control us, and you know, psychedelics help us open our mind to different levels of self-actualization, self-awareness, which I'm gonna fully agree with. But I also think that a big piece of it is, well, have you ever talked to anyone who's had those experiences, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, where they're like, this is what we were doing. They have profound experiences to tell. It's not just, yes, I bumped around and did this and that. It's I found this out about myself. And now that I know, this is how I've changed my behavior. It's never a 5-minute conversation, I'll tell you that.
This is so true. And there's, you know, LSD and cannabis and psilocybin, or magic mushrooms as they're known. They're not the only ones out there. So there's also ketamine. There's ayahuasca, which is more of like a spiritual, typically like shaman led, experience.
Yes.
And with things like particularly ketamine, I know that there are certain states that are allowing psychiatrists and different clinics to have testing. And so you're not necessarily doing this like at a rave per se, or just like at your house on your couch. You have the ability to go into a controlled setting with a professional that can control the dosage, and you know how pure it is, because we know that there is always going to be an element of what's the word? Unknown, if you are buying something off the street versus if you are going into an office or going into a dispensary and getting it there. It's going to be a little bit more regulated, especially in terms of like the dosage and stuff. But if you want to explore more about this, so there is a organization called MAPS, that's MAPS, it's the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. I will make sure to put their link, as well as a link to the original article that I was reading from, in the description, if you're like me and you like to nerd out on stuff like this. If you're like me and Alicia, because I feel like we're on the same page here.
Yeah. May I speak to the ayahuasca experience?
Yes, of course.
Just a little short as a person who has had that experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My questions are changing, Alicia. My questions are changing.
We're supposed to be by the minute. About tarot. No.
My bad.
No, you're fine. No. Well, because it's part of the spiritual experience, so I mean, it's in alignment. Because the entire purpose of medications and health is what? Healing. For you to feel like yourself. For you to come into who you are and find your space in reality and what's real to you, what's authentic to you. And I feel like it's the same thing. Well, it's not the same. But if the goal is I need to sit with a therapist and then be medicated versus sitting with a shaman and receiving a holistic experience, both of those things are a beautiful healing practice and they deserve their day in the sun. Whereas ayahuasca is like... You're punching it in, and that is a beautiful self-exploratory state of being that I guess your day-to-day mind would maybe never allow you to go to. However, for most people who are in that healing trajectory, pieces of that journey have to do with literally, like, I'm gonna say reaching enlightenment, but essentially reaching a self-actualized state where they can function without anything. So I feel like the next step forward is allowing the mind to open in a way with assistance and with shamanic oversight.
Yes. The same way you would want a doctor to be partnering with you on that journey.
And
if you're taking SSRIs.
And if we're just going to be like real, all of these beautiful, holistic, psychedelic experiences existed long before our doctors and pharmaceutical.
Yes, there's so much out there to be explored and to be re-explored because there were things that were available and ready to... I mean, y'all, they used to sell... Coca-Cola used to have Coke in it. And I'm not saying that's right, but I'm just saying... I mean, we got to be... I think that we have to take some ownership of like our own exploration of, you know, if you want to find what works for you, make sure you're looking at all the options. And I also want to just say, if you are somebody that is interested in exploring some alternative forms of mental health treatment, there is a risk factor when it comes to certain mental health disorders being in your family or hereditary.
Absolutely.
Off the top of my head, I know schizophrenia, if you have or you... maybe think you have it, or you have a family member that has been diagnosed with schizophrenia, I would proceed with caution. I would actually just do your research because there has been studies that link that if you have, and I think there might be a couple more, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know schizophrenia off the top of my head. If you do have that diagnosis or somebody in your family does, you may want to talk with a doctor about the experiences that you're trying to have and the potential risk factors, because I know there is a risk of making your situation worse if you're already diagnosed with it and possibly like, what is it called? Triggering it based on like your DNA structure. Again, y'all know I'm not a mental health professional. I'm just a Black girl with anxiety. So again, do your research.
I appreciate this disclaimer. But you're spot on.
Yes, always. I am not a doctor. I do not have a degree for this in particular. My degree is in kinesiology. It's not in this. So do your research. But yes, Alicia, thank you so much for like sharing that. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And vibing with me on our mind games. So I want to talk a little bit about your journey, because I feel like your journey is such an interesting one from like the environment that you grew up in and the career and the mindset that you have now, and kind of how we get from one end to the other. So let's take it all the way back.
Where did you grow up
and how was like, obviously you went to school to be a social worker. So how from childhood, was there talks about mental health? Was that ever in conversation? I know you said you also spent a lot of time in the church. So how did those two go hand in hand, or did they?
They did. So it's like, I feel like I've always kind of been in two worlds, well, one foot in one foot in the other. So growing up, I was heavily involved in my church. I'm from the South, okay?
So, South Carolina. South
Carolina. So Southern Baptist. I'm in church Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday. And that was like the crux of the culture around me. But that was also the place where we dissected things related to our mental health that we could not solve within our own understanding, in my church words. So this is where we would, you know, one, obviously the Black community has lots of ties to the church and what that means and how it forms community. So that's where we would lay our burdens. Like we come here to talk, we come here to, you know, express our needs. But as a spiritually, I don't want to say advanced, a spiritually attuned person at a very young age, I was having lots of experiences that I would try to tell my family, friends, and they would just be like, oh, just pray about that, you know, or when, you know, people in my family would pass away, I'd be like, yeah, I know that they passed away, but they're also like standing over there still at the house. So yeah. Like, and I see them, you don't see them, but I see them and I know I'm not crazy. So it was just be this line of like, I am going to have to maybe have a better understanding of how I can help people, but also know that there's people who experience that similar spiritual experience that I experienced, and they are not insane.
Yeah.
So that was like one of the initial paths to social work, was watching my fellow pastors and ushers and folks in my church, watching them counsel people, watching them change lives and provide encouragement. And so although I didn't always agree with how things were done or what was said or what information may or may not have been weaponized, I was still, yeah, you can dissect that if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, we could jump into that, because I do feel like there is like with church, there is so much opportunity to do good, but I think when you don't have, particularly for mental health, if you don't have any professional training in mental health in particular, it can be really easy to maybe think that you're helping or have good intentions of helping and do more harm than good.
Yes. And I guess an example that I could give was I had someone very close to me and they had schizophrenia. And so they would go to the church often for advice and guidance. And watching how they reframed that advice and guidance from someone who was not a mental health professional literally changed their day-to-day life. Based on like their actions, they said, well, this person told me to do this, but I'm going to do this instead because I think that that's what their interpretation of what God said was to me. And then it would become something else. And they would take a whole new trajectory in life based on two sentences from someone who may be like spiritually endowed and with the right intentions, but not having a full understanding of what mental health disorders look like and how they are reframing the brain of someone who's not able to organize their thoughts day to day.
Right.
So those are the things that I saw. I feel like on the one hand, I saw how a spirit moves through a room, how the Holy Spirit connect with people. And I wanted to be connected to that. But I also felt like there were there was a lot of church that ain't have nothing to do with church. I'm going to just be real.
Yeah.
I was like, that has nothing to do with church. You say come as you are, but then they came as they were and you were not accepting.
And the whispers start whispering.
Yeah. Or, you know, things related to like sexual orientation. Yeah, we're just going to dig it in.
Let's get into it. We already, doors open.
It's just like, no, you cannot lay hands and pray the gay away. Things like that. Like I saw the negatives just as much as I saw the positives. Then I wanted to take the healing experience with me, with the knowledge that I was doing it in the right frame of mind, with the knowledge that I was connected to the right spirit.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. For one, I think it is. I'm happy that you were able to walk away and pull from like what you really loved about it to the stuff that you didn't want to replicate in your own life and how you treated other people. Because I think sometimes some people go through such terrible experiences in church that it completely, like, they kind of miss the things that were positive and good, and so it just pushes them out of community, and then it kind of pushes them out of spirituality.
Yes.
And sometimes it takes people a long time to come back to that if it's something that they truly want in their life, because there's the good and the bad become so intertwined that it's hard to separate like the good experiences. Yes. That you had from the really terrible and like traumatic sometimes experience that you had or that you observed there. So
yeah, that was, and honestly, to be real, like that was kind of my experience too. Like I was estranged from the church for about 10 years before I decided to go back.
Really?
And so what I call it is like the church hurt. Like you get church hurt. Where you're in a safe space and you're expressing something real and someone like judges that version of you, like, and then justifies that judgment with Jesus. And then you're stuck with this perpetual thought of like, I am like fundamentally flawed in some way, when really like this is me opening up in my vulnerable state and asking for guidance. I say that as a person who is bisexual and had the whole process of coming out and having to deal with that within the church realm. And being politely told, if you're going to do that, then you can't be here, and having to leave. But then also feeling like what I'm experiencing, regardless of what anyone says, is an unconditional type of love. And I don't feel like that's wrong. And I feel like so many other practitioners that I have come into contact with have experienced a similar type of church hurt. And now they're almost like too scared to venture into anything spiritual because they're like, oh, I don't want to be, pretty much like, I don't want to be holier than thou, but I also don't want to be judged for not being good enough to be like a spiritual guide in any way. Does it make sense?
Yeah. It's just, I think it's just the effects of that. Those experiences keep you isolated. Did you feel a sense of isolation when they like politely asked you to leave?
Yeah, because I looked left and right and I said, well, everybody under the rainbow is on this choir right now. So what are we doing?
Okay. We're really getting into it today. She said, everybody under the rainbow is in the choir, leading the choir, playing the drums, okay. If we're really getting into it.
I mean, I'm just going to be real with you. Like, there's been a lot of quotes spat at me regarding creative people, sexuality, and music. I'm not even going to go down that path, but I'm going to just say that the same bravery it takes to be yourself is the same bravery it requires to express from the heart. And music and sound is a beautiful and spiritual experience, and you can't police people's sexuality just to ensure that, you know, your choir sounds better than the other choir down the street. I'm not gonna get on that box. I'm still in my feels about it.
It's okay. You can't rush the healing process, especially when it comes to that. I mean, that's got to be hard though. You go through your whole life having like 5 out of 7 days of the week you're in community, you're in this particular community. And so that's something I always think about, especially when I speak to people that are in the LGBTQ community or that aren't and have left church because they were not so welcome anymore. And I think it's really like easy to say, well, just find another community. But for you, you were in this community, like this was family.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like this was family. This is where you were all the time. And so to be like asked to leave, it's just sad, really. Like it's just really sad. And it's just like a very lonely road. And I think in some ways I can understand somebody that decides to hide their whole life because they're like, I'm going to, you know, if you live in a small town and this is all you know, and this is all the people that you talk to are also part of this other community that you're in. It's a huge risk, I feel like, to then leave, to come out, number one, That's like super brave, because it's like you come out and it's a gamble. Either people are going to talk to you after, or maybe they won't.
Oh, they won't. Then...
And then... She said, oh, they won't.
They won't. Well, I say that because I feel like I have the same like coming out process, quote, quote, like as it relates to spirituality. Like I was running I've always been a reader. And so that, I guess that was the other thing. Like, there are lots of spiritually gifted people who are in the church and they do not share those gifts because they're like, oh, like this is the socially acceptable set of gifts. And then these are the ones that are you two in the sticks. That's like hoodoo voodoo or whatever. We don't deal with that. It's kind of the line. And in my mind, I'm like, we're black folk. We are a spiritual people. Like our ancestry is derived from the earth. That's like, I know. When I had my quote, the second coming of age, the second quote coming out process of, okay, yes, I'm an actual psychic. Like people come to me as strangers and they ask me questions and I can answer their question about their life and I've never met them. That is a spiritual gift. And in church world, it's like, okay, well, the gift of prophecy is reserved for pastors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're not striving to be that, then
you cannot have that.
Then that gift doesn't exist, or you're not using it for the right reasons. And so that was kind of the process that I had to go through, because immediately, as soon as I was like, well, this is what's going on. And they're like, are you sure? And in my head, I was like, the fuck, why would I make that up?
Yeah. Like, I'm not in here creating stories. Like,
one, why would I make it up? Two, that's too many people to be accurate for. I'm creative, but I ain't that creative. And three, do you know how hard it is to like be like, okay, yeah, I do this for real? You know how right you have to be all the time?
This is very true. Like, this is so true.
You can't mess it up. Like,
yeah,
you're either spot on or you're Miss Cleo and you're fake.
Or you're not. Yeah.
Like, it's
or you're Miss Cleo with the most terrible Jamaican accent I've seen since Cool Runnings.
Yeah, yeah. Literally. Call me now for your free readers.
Yeah. And then Little Mermaid popped out with Mr. Crab. Like, they couldn't find a real Jamaican person in Hollywood. And she got legs. She ain't yet. I was like, oh my gosh. I saw it in the movies. Loved the movie outside of that. And I was like,
y'all had time. Y'all couldn't
find anybody that spoke patois?
Y'all had time.
Y'all couldn't get somebody to Zoom there to just send the recording in from... Okay, all right. Anyway, I want to go back to, you get me?
Because
my husband and I were just laughing. We just looked at each other in the movie and like, okay.
Like, man, y'all got millions. Make it work.
You could find some. Call Usain Bolt. He could have done it. Busta Rhymes, somebody. Busta. They could have done it. So I want to talk a little bit about like the next step in life. Because obviously you decide you wanted to help people and you moved into social work. So how was being a social worker and what you called during our initial conversation a spiritually sound social worker?
People are spiritual creatures. We all are spiritual creatures. And so with social work, what I saw and found was I am constantly dealing with people who are navigating trauma. And some of those traumas are, you know, solved within the circumstance of their environment, but some are solved within the spiritual realm. And with social work code of ethics, I'm only really allowed to speak to one side of those challenges ethically.
Yeah.
But it is preached to us on like a personal level that if you don't have you together, then you can't help other people. And so that was a big part of me becoming a better social worker over time. So to give it context, I did a variety of different types of social work. I did sex abuse investigations where I was, you know, partner with undercover law enforcement. I was in advocacy centers. I did forensics. I've done like conservatorship where we would have cases within Child Protective Services and we would you know, be assigned to a family for a year, 2 years. If their kids have been removed, to put them back together and figure out what this family needed step by step to make sure that, you know, they had what they, all the skills that they needed in order to take care of a child, all the way through foster care, where I'm licensing homes and walking through and interviewing, you know, soon to be foster parents. And like, why do you really want to do this? You know? And it is very easy to become jaded with the world because you are constantly, you are constantly exposed to some of the worst environments and worst human conditions. Like you can read in a textbook all day, like what, like sexual trauma looks like in a child, but to see it play out every day, a whole other thing. Like, you can know that human trafficking exists, but when you see the results of how someone responds in real time, like, they'll just pretend they don't know your name. They don't know their name, no birthday, no nothing. They will lie to you. They will steal your purse on the way out. Like,
oh, wow.
And we're talking, like,
because they're in survival
like
mode,
six,
at that
7 years old, like.
Yeah, like, they're in survival mode.
I remember having a case where I had three kiddos. I want to say they were like 6, 7, 8, and they did not know how to, like, no, actually a little bit older. They would have been the equivalent of like second, third grade. And they could not read, could not write, but they could go to a Walmart and jack about $300 worth of groceries in 10 minutes. No cart.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's like, you have to have your spirituality together. You have to have a strong sense of who you are, because you have to feel justified, not only in like decisions you make every day for yourself, but decisions that you're making for other people's families. Because once they're made, they're made. So when you're walking into a courtroom or you're testifying for or against something, and you know you've been seeing the family for months, for years, and you know you've been watching them go to treatment, you know, you have to be a sound judge of character. So if you don't have your life right, then you can't. Like,
you can't help anybody else.
You can't. Like, you might think you can.
Yeah.
It'll bleed over.
Alicia, are you an empath?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. For sure. And I don't know why I said probably, for sure. And I think that was tough for me, because especially watching like trauma interviews, especially like forensics, like if we have to do hard law enforcement arrests and things, like knowing the kids who are like, oh, my mom told me to say this, and so I'm saying it because we're going through a divorce and she wants my dad to get in trouble story, versus like, this is trauma that's been going on for years in my home and this is the first time I've ever said it out loud trauma, resonate very different.
Yeah,
in the eye, but also in the body, and you have to learn how to navigate both of those with equal treatment and respect. And so you'll get to see all the darker parts of the world, and that can, I guess, in social work they call it like bad world syndrome, where you just decide that everything's bad because you're surrounded by bad all the time.
Oh, okay.
So it's.
I could, yeah, that would, because that would warp your sense of reality, and it's where, because you are hyper focused on the like not even negative. I feel like negative is an understatement. You're hyper focused on the worst parts of humanity.
And it's like,
and just,
yeah, it's like one thing to see it on the news, but it's a whole other thing to like see it on the news 2 days later because you just dealt with it, and then having to be like. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people going, oh man, that sucks. Flip channel. Like, so that was something that I did really struggle with too, was the juxtaposition between I'm living this in real time, and then there's other people who look at it and go, man, that sucks. All right. So what's for dinner?
Like, yeah.
It was hard.
How did you deal with your mental health?
Yeah.
Like, how did you, was there a point where you were taking it home? Or did you, like, how did you not take it home?
There was a point when I was taking it home, and I took a break. That's what they tell you to do. Take a break.
Good.
But in the time of that break, I actually became a yoga teacher.
That makes sense. Like, that makes sense.
It was like, and here we go.
Yeah.
I think that my brain was like, you know what? You've done enough. It's been six, seven years of this.
Yeah.
And I know there's lots of social workers who've been doing it for 40, 50 years. Hats off to them. That's not what I'm built for. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I use social work in a different way now in my spiritual practice, because I'm still navigating those traumas, except I'm having conversations that are not bound in red tape by, like, social work ethics or whatever system I have to conform to. Becoming a yoga teacher was a big part of my healing process, along with my psychedelics experience. because it forced me to literally do the reflection that was required all the way down to the root. Like, literally the root. Like, this is who I really am, truly. This is where I feel safe. This is how I safely express. Like, these are the traumas that I've experienced on a personal level that I need to sort through before I can help anybody sort through them. And then this is how I use intuitive skill in my day-to-day versus this is how I use intuitive skill to help others, and making sure that that space isn't crowded. And truly, I became a social a yoga teacher just to get me together.
I would feel like there's a lot of continual healing, and maybe like, okay, I need to step away and kind of rebuild myself.
But yeah, there was,
and before I go back to it.
Yes, but there were days of crying on the mat. There were days
crying on the mat is different. If you do yoga, I think it was probably like years. I've been doing yoga since freshman year of high school. I was doing Bikram yoga.
That's so
awesome.
I don't know
his name anymore. My mom was like, I'm doing this thing called hot yoga. Do you want to come with
hot
me?
Yoga.
No, she didn't ask me. She was like, you're coming with me. Get a yoga mat. And I've been doing hot yoga and like regular yoga since freshman year of high school. But I don't think I cried on the mat until college. That's a whole other thing. But yeah, crying on the mat is just like, you got to let it out. And then just, it's very, very cathartic.
Sometimes, and that's something I've really learned, like, as a teacher, a lot of the things that you're guided to say during those classes are very intuitively led. So you can have a class focus and write out a class and think, okay, we're going to focus on this chakra and do da 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 da.
Yeah.
And then you'll get to the class and somebody will walk in and you'll be like, I know that's what I want to teach, but this is what this person needs right now. And you'll feel it. And you'll feel it, and you'll find yourself. Well, speaking to my experience, I find myself speaking at the soul level to something that needed to heal for someone else. Or something will be reflected back to me, like, in an empathic way. Like, maybe they're going through a certain speckle in time, and I was in that space, you know, maybe a few years ago. And so that will be what pops in my head, what I needed to remember at that moment, statements that helped me heal. And so I feel like that helping other people heal has helped me grow so much. It forced me to get out of the way for a second. Well, not just for a second. It's like in neo-shamanism, they call it like the hollow bone. Like, you are just a vessel delivering a message. And so that's
kind of... hollow bone.
So you're a vessel.
I like that.
Delivering a message. So it's kind of the same. The same way that our pastors are trusted with said word and said message is the same way that information is channeled in the spiritual realm. Now, certain people have to be trusted with said message. But essentially, that is the intuitive gift. That is the prophetic gift. And that presents to people in all different ways. And I feel like yoga helped to clear my channel enough. It's kind of like being a radio antenna and then you're on the wrong station because you got too much static going on. Like, you got too many bills going on, your family ain't got it together, you feel like, you know, my relationship ain't right. And then yoga will be like, here's what is out of alignment. Yes. And then as you slowly curl up, you'll be like, all right, so now things are quiet enough for me to hear what I need to hear about myself. So yeah,
the quietness in yoga is game changer. Like, so much happens in that quietness. Somebody asked me the other day, like, why do you like hot yoga? Why would you ever do that to yourself? And it's I was like, okay. But I, as much as I love working out, it is for me like a, like, you know, when you, let's just say like you're cleaning your car with like that big yellow sponge and you're just like, you sprayed it with water and now you like dip the sponge in soap and then you're just like washing the car and now like there's dirt in the soap. Like, that's for me is life. Like, you're just washing and washing and now this yellow sponge is now like brownish. There's like stuff dripping out of it. Like, it's gross. There's leaves. There's old bugs that got mushed. And you can't, like, you can try to wring it out, but it's all gunk in there. For me, hot yoga is like you wring it out, you put it in like a clean bucket, you shake it up a little bit, you take it out, you wring it out again. It's like that for my body, but also for my brain. Like, okay, sure. I just need to like level set a little bit here.
And I love that. I love how you put that. That makes sense to me. I like that.
Thanks. I like
that. It's like and also that makes sense to me too. It's like a single mind focus. That's something that's really taught in actual yoga practice. So the word yoga derives from the word yuge or yoke, as in yoke of the spirit, yoke of the soul. So it's kind of like creating the single mind focus is so much a part of the practice that meditation in and of itself is the yoga practice. So while the asana practice, which is the movement and positions, is part of it, the goal of the asana practice is to bring the mind into a single point focus. And so you, which is sponge, is the single focus. So for some people, the temperature of the room is the single focus, or them sweating, or them looking at the mat, or just them closing their eyes. In meditation is the single focus. But even then, there's like levels to the meditation too. There's like, all right, awareness of the body in the physical room, and then that disappears, and then it's just the emotional state and all your emotions you feel, and then that disappears, and then it's like, okay, this is the void that I am existing in as oneness with the universe. Like, this is samadhi state. That's a single focus. So it's
levels to it. Yes,
it's not just pretzeling up and trying to get your foot behind your neck. Like, it's about your mind. And I feel like so much of the chakra balancing system is in alignment with all the other channeling methods and spiritual practices that are part of my daily, but also taught as like pure divination, if we wanted to make the segue.
yes. I grabbed a little quote. I may or may not have like stalked your Instagram and your website.
Go ahead.
But I grabbed a little quote and it said, I quit my job, got divorced, moved away, ditched the influencer life, retired myself as a social worker, and started over by myself with basically nothing. I want to talk about that piece because I feel like that kind of coincides with the books that you wrote. Can you talk a little bit about that decision to like completely step away and how your books, how the girl, I'm going to get the name of it wrong. The trilogy, essentially the three books that you wrote, like how they came about.
Yes. So the Awakening trilogy is literally about me looking around and going, oh my God, this shit ain't it. Like, no parts of it. I feel like there's kind of a stigma of like when people start to radically change their life, people go, why are you acting crazy? Like, what? You should do this. Like, my relationship was very, I'm gonna just be real, it was very abusive. There was emotional abuse, there was also physical violence, and I chose to leave. And in the midst of that leaving, there were a lot of people that were like, why don't you just stay and try to, you know, or I don't, oh, it doesn't sound like they would do that. I don't think that they would.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, for them, they're like, oh, you're acting crazy. And I'm like, no, I'm actually doing exactly what I want to do. I'm actually doing what I feel like is the most healthy for my mental health, for my peace of mind. Like, this is what I need. Same thing with my job. I felt, as much as I love being a social worker, I think at the time I was working at an alternative school for high schoolers. You do with that what you will.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time.
Woo! So much of what I saw around me was the trauma of, you know, maybe not having a parent or not having strong guidance, and then what that looks like, you know, in a already stressed behavioral environment, and then the stress of do your work or you're going back to juvenile detention.
To juvie. Yeah.
Like, and seeing that pipeline, and I was like, am I perpetuating a part of a system that I don't support? If this is out of alignment with who I am, then why am I doing it? We're done. I'm done. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. Same thing with my environment. I love where I was, but I wasn't there on my own terms. I was there based on my relationship. So it's kind of like, I'm not where I want to be. I'm not who I'm with. I'm not doing anything that I want to do. At the core of it, I am an artist. I'm a creative, and I am a spiritually gifted person, and no part of my life reflects that. And so in order for me to feel safe in that, I have to create it. I can't depend on anyone to create that for me. And so I started writing. And I have always been a write it out until you feel better type of person. And yoga also encouraged that. Like, in yoga school, you have to journal. You will sit and self-reflect.
Really?
Yes. It was a...
I didn't know
it
that.
Was, well, for, at least for us, it was a day. It was a daily and a weekly journal. And then we had to, like, bring that information to our teachers, and we would speak about it, and then we would kind of build our practices around the week towards healing those things and whatever came up. And so for me, part of that was poetry. I've always written. I've been in a lot of, like, I'm just gonna toot my own horn and say, like, I've had published before in my, like, childhood. Like, I've loved writing. And so but during my relationship, I was unhappy, and I stopped writing for about 10 years and and doing social work at that time. So it's like, I was receiving all of this information, but I wasn't, like, fleshing it out of my system to be processed. And I feel like that's what a lot of people do. That's what a lot of Black women do. We are very open to the experience of, like, we're strong. We know that we can handle it. And yes, we can, and we're going to. But handling it doesn't mean you handled it well. It just means you survived it. So we're not dissecting it. We're coping. We're dealing. We're not.
Coping through life.
Yeah, and then that just becomes the norm. It becomes what's expected. So, and I'm going to say this is probably controversial. It is what it is. I feel like in other cultures, you know, there are said tears. There are said... you know, I'm upset, I'm sad, so I'm just going to cry openly, and I'm going to be vulnerable and open in that way. Whereas with Black women, our disconnect, our emotional disconnect presents as having an attitude, or, you know, being grumpy, or not, or basically not being open, or shutting down, or...
Yeah, that's not controversial at all.
That, or hyper-masculinity in the female
form. There's actually a study. There's a study that just came out, I think it might have been Harvard. It came out last year, I think, and it showed that anxiety and depression shows up differently in Black women. And it comes off as irritability.
Yes.
It comes off as, like, perceived anger or not wanting to socialize with people. Like, because this layer of strength that we have had to have, and then society becomes like, oh, you're a strong Black woman. It's just like you're wearing, like, these heavy coats, like, you just got these heavy coats that you have to be so strong, and then you don't have much movement. So you can't really, like, scream or cry or have a moment to like go outside and like yell.
It does not afford you grace.
Are you good? What's wrong with you? Like, get it together and like, let's keep going. And you end up feeling so confined that I think that's where the irritability and like the, it's like, I want to have this emotional response, but then I've got to inhibit that emotional response, which creates another emotional response that everybody just deems as a negative emotional response, instead of just giving ourselves permission to just cry. Like, I only just started crying like 5 years ago, and now I cry often.
And it's hard.
I hate it crying.
It's hard.
It's hard. It's super hard.
We are programmed and conditioned to be soldiers, even against our own emotions.
Even against our own emotions. We are fighting against our own body's want to, like, here, tears are a tool. Like, tears are literally your body's way of releasing and getting back to homeostasis. Is literally like when you cry, there are hormone things that happen that kind of release this stagnant energy or this emotion or feeling, whether it's happiness, like there could be something great that's happening and you start crying. There could be something that's terrible that just happened, or you just might need a good cry. Like sometimes I feel like we just need a good cry to just let out things that we can't quite put words to.
Once a month I have a solid just an ugly cry. Yeah. Just a snot cry.
Yeah, an ugly one. Like, just get the tissues ready, like the pillow's gonna be wet, it's okay. But not a lot of us hear that. I remember like in college, we lost like our last game, like we got kicked out of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I played basketball in college at University of Texas. And I remember our last year, I came in with two other freshmen. So when we graduated, all three of us graduated together. And so my best friend from college, her name is Ashley as well. And I remember she was crying. And I remember distinctly saying, like, don't let him see you cry. Don't let him see your emotions. Like, don't let them, like, cry when we get in the back. And now I regret it. Like, in hindsight, I'm like, why? Because there's all these perceptions that we have to hold up. Like, we're strong. We lost. Like, this is it for us. But it's okay. We're still... For who? For why? Like, we put everybody else's needs before our own. Like, no, I should have just been like, girl, let it out. It's okay. Like, this is sad. It's a sad day. It's been a long 4 years. But, we have to give ourselves permission to cry.
And to be real, that's kind of what I felt like writing my books. Because I never gave myself permission to feel anything too deeply because I had to get to the next thing. So, and I feel like a lot of people do that. They just justify, well, I want to cry, but I got this going on, so I got to go. Like, do not equate, like, timeliness with, like, healing. Like, it's not. That's not.
It's not linear at all.
Yeah, don't put those two things in the same box. Like, don't compartmentalize your healing with, like, your productivity. Oh, I don't have time for that. That doesn't work. And I feel like that's a big piece of my becoming and other people's becoming of, like, practitioners. It's being able to be vulnerable with the self. It's being able to understand and normalize shortcomings, and then realizing they aren't shortcomings. It's just who you are. It's just your version of what you believe is right and wrong. And, you know, after you think something for a long time, your thought is a belief. So what really are your beliefs, and where do they come from? And why do we think that that's okay or not okay? And why do we think that this or that doesn't belong? And then we get to really dissecting, like, who gave you that belief if you didn't give it to yourself? Is this part of your conditioning? Yeah. Is this part of your work culture? So a lot of the writing process and putting the books out was very cathartic in that I had to face me. And there were moments when I would write something that was so real and so raw, and I just typed it and I never looked at it again. And I just gave it to the publishers because I was like, I can't read it again. It was so real and so just like visceral and guttural. Like, I never saw it again until the book was out and in my hands. And I was just like, yeah, everybody needs that. Everybody needs that place of honesty where they can put the things. Nobody say you gotta put it out there for the world, okay? If you don't wanna put it on Amazon, you don't have to.
It's okay.
But I can't be, in my social work mind, I was like, someone somewhere is gonna benefit from this. Like, I feel like that whole trilogy should have like trigger warnings all over it. Because there's everything.
Yeah.
There's everything. There's like, there's sexual violence, there's domestic violence, there's like, there's strange relationships, there is the becoming and understanding of sexual identity. Like, there's a lot. There's normal family dynamics.
So it sounds like you took all of the experiences and trauma that you went through, like, I'm gonna put it on paper.
Yeah, I think there's a piece of me that had separated from it entirely, and putting it on paper and reading it back forced me to realize who I truly was. Like, yes, I am who I am now, and that's part of my experience, but I can't just say all this at once and someone truly understand it. So to have a, like, concrete piece of something that says this is like a part of my identity is, I think, one of the most priceless and beautiful experiences we could all have. That's why I feel like journaling is really important, because that's how all this started. It was just a bunch of journals and I just typed them.
Wow. So your journal became your art, essentially.
Yeah.
And your pain and your trauma that became your journals is now art. For your healing and for healing of other people.
Yes.
So you have been in service of people really forever.
Forever.
Whether that be in a social work setting or in terms of like putting your pain on paper to then help others heal as well. And now you're in a different space of really leaning into your psychic intuition and tarot card reading. So can you tell me a bit about that and kind of what you're doing now?
So the starting point with that, well, let me just say this. I've been very spiritually aware, like pretty intuitive all my life. But the challenge was, I would tell people about something I was seeing, healing, feeling, experiencing, and they'd be like, don't tell nobody that. That sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. Or because, well, if you are speaking to, you know, some generations that are older than you, they put any of those experiences in the, like, devilment box. Like, if it's not Jesus, it's the devil, so boo.
It's devil, yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I would have someone pass away in my family, everybody would be crying at the funeral, and I'd be looking around like, well, he's standing over there, too. I mean, he's laying there, but he's standing over there. Yeah. And just being like, if I tell somebody that, they're going to think I'm crazy, but I know that I'm not crazy because I'm here and I see him there and I know that I'm not crazy. So it's always been this push-pull of like making sure that I know that I'm not like out of it, but also navigating the exploration of it safely. And so I feel like that is a big piece of like my movement is about empowering the spiritualist to explore safely. It came after yoga school. And also after some experiences regarding like psychedelic sacred plant medicines, that sort of thing. I've always had the skills to read things, but it went from, I feel like this is going to happen to, on this day, at this time, with this person wearing this red shirt, we're going to do this. Like, just changed everything.
Just heightened, yeah.
And so, one day, I was telling my friend about all the experiences that I was having. She was like, I think you can help my friend. And I was like, well, I don't know your friend. And she's like, well, you don't know a lot of people and you still know stuff about him, so you might as well just talk to her. It was a random lady and never met her. She just called me on the phone. And as soon as she picked up the phone, I could feel everything that was going on in her house. And I was like, whoa, you have like a demon in your shower. What's happening? And we talked for like 2 hours about what to do and all that. And it was just this moment of like, okay, I can really do this. Like, there were years where I would make predictions and like use my journal and write it down. And then I would go back and be like, okay, I wrote it down on this day, it happened on this day. So like the biggest part was just proving myself to myself, because what do you do? Like, yeah. how do you prove it? You know? Because most people are like, oh, you're psychic, tell me about the future, what I'm gonna do. Like, girl.
Yeah.
So yeah. You have to figure out what you can and can't do, what you're able to do, and what your skills are. And I took a couple years to figure out exactly what works for me and what doesn't. So I feel like that's my, aside from actually reading for people day to day and like reading for like private clients and also like corporate businesses too. Now I'm in the space of like teaching tarot to other people and then helping them navigate how to learn what they need to figure out their practice. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to do tarot. You don't have to get your crystal ball and stand around it. Like, yeah. You don't have to do all that. I feel like that's a fear that people have regarding like divination in that world, because they either feel like people are so like deep in the woo-woo that they are not real people. Like, they're, yeah, like,
how do you keep that balance though? Because there can be kind of like this spectrum on the spirituality side, just like there's a spectrum, I feel like, on the religion side, where you can get so deep into it that you don't quite feel grounded. So when somebody that's not on this side of the spectrum talks to you, not you, but if somebody is like deep in it and you're talking to them, sometimes you're like, okay, we're still here. Like, we're still like
feet on the ground.
How do you stay grounded?
In yoga practice, we literally have a grounding practice, like people have a gratitude practice. So yes, meditation is part of that, but also aligning all of the chakras, like not just like the seven, but technically in the spiritual world for me, in regards to like intuitive reading, it goes all the way up to 12. So I'll have to balance all the chakras all the way up to 12. I go outside and put my feet on the actual ground. I feel the earth on my toes. I'm around people who do normal things. And also with my social work experience, I've experienced kind of the worst of the worst in real time. Yeah. And so when I have these moments of like kind of getting, I don't want to say carried away, but essentially being caught in that world, because the spiritual world is its own world and there's levels to that shit too. But circling back, having friends that will like check you when you need to be checked, like creating a support system that actually supports you without any vested interest in any of your outcomes.
Yes. That's drop the mic on that one. That's the one.
That's key. Yeah.
Yes.
But, and also knowing when I need to be by myself, knowing when I don't need to reach for people, knowing when I need to be in solitude, taking your rest, taking your recess, your sabbatical, whatever it is that you need, and finding solid boundaries to create safe spaces for yourself, even if that's just by yourself. I feel like sometimes it's a real space of guilt, because especially for people who are like hyper productive, and I'm gonna say this because, you know, being overly independent is a trauma response. I'm speaking to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and me. And me.
Knowing when to not work, knowing when to find that balance in what you do and why you do it, recentering. And making your well-being a practice as well. Making staying grounded in reality a practice. Making happiness and gratitude a part of your day-to-day practice. You do not have to sit like a yogi on the top of, you know, the Himalayas with your legs crossed for 4 years and like...
Yeah. You don't have to do that. It's not always what it looks like.
Your meditation could be walking or working out or just sitting and writing or planting flowers or whatever it is. Again, the single mind focus, that is a big piece that kept me grounded, because that's our world. We're covered in distractions all the time. our phones are a distraction, yeah. and everybody on them trying to reach us. Like, even the idea that someone can just call you and you're expected to just pick up, like, you are just supposed to be available to all people all the time with the square that you yeah. carry around. Like,
yes. It's so weird because I think about, like, before, oh my God, before we had cell phones, but before cell phones had Wi-Fi and social media apps and all this. Now it's like, I see that you're on social media and you haven't replied, or it's work and I'm going to email you at midnight and then I'm going to go on Slack and see if you're green to see, you know, so I think there's so many ways we have to set boundaries and barriers now because there's so many ways to access us. And that's really just like, personally, you have to set those barriers. But I want to go back to you mentioning like just sitting in gratitude, and this is something I did on an episode a little while ago, but since we already did the mind games question and answer, I want to take a moment and share this moment with you and have a moment of gratitude. So each of us can name like three things each, and maybe we go back and forth. I'll name one, you name one, and we each name three things. And as for everyone that's listening, I want you to also think about three things that you are grateful for in this moment. So I will start off and I will say, what I'm grateful for today is this conversation because it is just very refreshing and I think fulfilling for me to be able to have a conversation like this, especially with somebody like you that's willing to be open and vulnerable and has done the work and continues to do the work in a variety of ways. And it seems like you are very in tune with like, I need to serve myself so I can serve other people. So I think that's a beautiful thing. So thank you.
Gratitude. I pretty much want to say the same thing. I appreciate the social outlet. No, no, I appreciate you holding space for safe conversations. That really means a lot to me, like on a personal level. I'm not gonna cry.
It's okay, but if you want to cry, you can cry.
If I had this podcast as a 12, 13, 14 year old girl, you know, I would have reshaped some parts of my life because I would have had like the strength in knowing that there were other people like me that existed, and even if we're doing different things, they're willing to open up and. Be seen in their light and in their shadows, I guess. I'm grateful for the space that you hold for me in this moment, but also for other women.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Wow. Thank you. I received that. Thank you. I'm grateful for I am grateful for the ability to go on adventures, even if it's like, I'm grateful for having a summer where I've been able to see my friends and my family, because that's something that I crave, and I've been able to have a lot of moments of joy, so I'm very grateful for that. Because I be lonely out here in Tampa, like me and my husband don't have friends out here, so I'm very grateful that I've just been presented with opportunities to go home and like go visit friends and just like, yeah, getting to be around the people that I love. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. There's just so much going on. I am grateful for the health of my child.
Yes. Yeah.
As I've navigated spirituality as it relates to creating life, that's a whole different level of stuff that I feel like my life has been preparing me for it, but I didn't realize how beautiful that aspect of it would be. Because at the soul level, we were always like discovering and rediscovering, but discovering someone else as part of like your soul's journey, soul's story that's like part of you, And even being able to just bring a piece of that experience to you and to this podcast and maybe to someone who may be listening out in the ether. I'm actually really grateful for that opportunity too.
Aww. Yes. Okay. Last one. The last one I have is, I'm just grateful to be here today.
Actually, yeah.
I'm grateful to just, like, I woke up this morning, I woke up feeling good, I wasn't in pain. I woke up and I am really grateful for the days that I wake up and I can breathe well, mm-hmm. and I'm not feeling a lot of pain, and I feel like I can get all the things that I want to get done and accomplish all the things that I want to accomplish without, like having a lot of pain or discomfort. Mm, so awesome. I'm glad I woke up today. I'm glad I woke up today, like feeling 100%. So yes, that's my third one.
health is wealth.
Health is wealth.
This is a moment of gratefulness, but also low key like a plug. Okay, so
that's okay. Plug away.
As I've been like moving through this podcast, I've also been creating like an online school for people who would like to become tarot readers, but also people who want to like discover their practice. So talking through all of what we've talked through today makes me really excited to launch my online course. It's launching on Friday, 777.
Here we go. Oh, that's a good number.
Right?
Yes. 77, yes.
So it is called The Path of the Mystic, Unveiling the Secrets of Tarot Mastery, and it will be on Teachable on Friday. Yes. So I'm grateful because in this moment, I was really able to like put it all together. Even in this week, like, yes, here's the knowledge about cards, but then here's the knowledge, like, backstory. Like, you know, here's how you connect. And, you know, here's how you bond with your cards. And here's what to prepare for if you're going to start reading for other people. And, you know, here's when you really need a break. And so talking through this with you kind of, like, helped me, I don't say validate, but essentially, like, validate the knowledge that I had. Being able to like speak about it at length just kind of made me feel like, yes, like I know that I've been doing it this entire time, but to be able to speak about it freely without like preparing a bunch of notes and because I'm like, yeah. I'm that person who would have like something typed and then I would have the teleprompter and just, and this was like a very,
no, you got it, it's all in there, it's
like
all,
a free
it's all in there.
Flow thing. And so I'm actually really grateful that like I was able to do that today. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Alicia. I appreciate you sharing that moment of gratitude. I appreciate everybody else that's sharing that moment of gratitude with us. Thank you so much for coming on today. Yeah. This has been a lot of fun. I would keep you for another 90 minutes, but you have a life and I can't sit here. I want to keep talking to people, but I know I can't do that. But I do appreciate you just taking time out today. Can you tell everybody where they can get a hold of you, get in touch with you, sign up for your programs, find them on Teachable? How can they find you?
Okay, so you can find me on my website. My website is trickyvibes.com. And there you can find everything from me, all the services that I do. And then any other cool collaborations that anybody is open to, I'm down for. So there you will find the links to my tarot course, or if you wanted to connect with me one-on-one and actually do like a psychic reading online, that's like my main squeeze. Like that's what I love to do. So I love to talk to people one-on-one. My sessions are usually about an hour. So you can book those online with me at any time. You can also follow me on Instagram at @trickyvibes. And then, oh, also, which I haven't even, like, told anybody about yet, but it's coming. So my books, I'm actually putting them into a virtual space. And I am,
oh, nice.
I am working with a team, and we are creating, like, a metaverse. Ooh. I know, right? I was like, oh, I'm so tech right now. I'm so tech. but that will be its own audiovisual experience. So there will be music, and there will be poems, and there will be photos and all that. So the Awakening Trilogy will become its own immersive experience. So that will also be coming on the website very, very soon. Yeah. So trickyvibes.com at trickyvibes on the IG.
Yes, I love that. Let me know when that's up, because I want to get in there and explore it. That's very cool. I just want to thank you again for joining today. I'll make sure all of Alicia's information is in the description so y'all can get a hold of her. Make sure you're following her at Tricky Vibes on Instagram. Hit her up. Her website is beautiful. So,
thank you.
Yes. I kept going back to her. I'm like, dang, this is nice. Like, I like this. This is...
Thank you.
It's got flow to it. It's stylish. It's a little you got some little snappy captions for things. She's like, I like this. but yes, make sure you guys hit her up. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you're following Black Girls Have Anxiety 2 on Instagram, TikTok, at Black Girls Have Anxiety 2 on both of those. And it's two O's, not one. So you got to type out the whole thing. But thank y'all for joining us today, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Black Girls Have Anxiety 2. No matter where you are in the world, I really appreciate your support. See you again on the next episode, but until then, follow us on Instagram at Black Girls Have Anxiety 2 and on Twitter at Anxious Black Girls. That's Anxious BLK Girls. And remember, just because you're struggling doesn't mean you have to struggle in silence. The more we talk about it, the more we heal.